all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Monday, December 12th, live from up here on Lake Wissota. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Aaron Zommer's down in Madison. Coming up this hour, State Senator Kelda Royce. We talked to her a couple of days back about the state budget surplus in light of her being appointed to the Joint Finance Committee, the group that basically writes the state budget for the legislature, and then has to work with the governor to come up with a compromise that hopefully will pass, or write something that's just going to lead to a long, drawn-out fight. And there's always the chance that that's going to happen this year yet again as well. So we'll talk to Senator Royce about that. To reach us, email radio at upnorthnewswi.com. And the phone numbers, plural, 715-388-7155. And as I was reminded over the weekend, I'm not telling people nearly often enough that the regular radio phone number for all of our shows on Civic Media works for this one as well. And that is 844-967-2789. Again, 844-967-2789. So you can use the toll-free 844 number or 715 to call us here up north. We want you to follow us all day long on our social feeds. Look for Up North News WI. Our website is upnorthnewswi.com. You can get our daily newsletter there. And you can continue to follow this show and all of the shows on the Civic Media empire of radio stations through civicmedia.us. And that takes us to the Civic Media holiday party, which we had over the weekend in Madison, where people gathered from all the radio stations around Wisconsin and came together for some dinner and a show at a comedy club and just get a chance to meet each other for the first time. In many instances, Aaron and I finally got to meet in person for the first time and sat next to each other at the comedy club, only for me to find out not only was this your first company holiday party of any of your work sites, but also your first visit to a comedy club.
Yeah, it was interesting, especially because in the email about it, it said, oh, and then we'll go over to the comedy club on State Street. And I just thought, do we just not know the name of it? But no, it's called the Comedy Club on State. It's
called the Comedy Club on State Street. Yeah. I mean, that was their very first joke, I guess, was their name. It's very, very dry joke, you know? So what'd you think?
It was fun. It was a good time. I mean, it was a lot like kind of what I expected it to be, which is not a good or bad thing. It's just a thing.
It's good entertainment. It really is. And you know, again, live comedy, first off, is great. No matter, kind of like live music, you know, it's kind of the old joke about, you know, pizza and other things, if you will. But, you know, every so often the you know, part of the reason you like to go is you catch one who just, you know, makes you bust out laughing and, you know, to the point where you've almost got to catch your breath. It doesn't happen every time, but that's half the fun is going, is seeing somebody with such immense talent. Now, I have to say in this case, for the show that we were at in Madison this weekend, there were two good comedians. There's always, you know, like a featured comedian, and then there's the headliner who comes on last. But there's also somebody local who kind of acts as the MC, tells a few jokes to warm up the crowd, and then introduces the first of the two comedians. I didn't catch his name, but the person who played the host on Saturday, he was hilarious. He was very dry. He was very, I don't know, negative isn't the word I'm looking for. Almost kind of sarcastic. I really liked him.
Yeah, me too. That is, sarcasm is something that I like, if you weren't aware. So yeah, I liked him a lot too.
Yes, it does rather appeal to us, and so we enjoyed doing that, just going for that short little walk from where we were gathered for the party. And I gotta tell you, at the dinner, you could look around the room and see that everybody, and I do mean this, everybody, even the people in management of Civic Media, everybody had this look of kind of surprise, like, look how big we've gotten over the year. You know, a year ago, there was no Civic Media. Now we've created this network. We've acquired these radio stations. We have hit the on button on all kinds of programming, got to meet people from Richland Center and Wisconsin Rapids and Wausau. And it was just wonderful to see everybody and get an appreciation for all the shows that we do as well. Because as I've noted previously, there are a couple of shows like this one that are on all of the stations across the network at some point. And then there are some shows that are only on, you know, one or two of our stations, at least at this point, and they're very good as well. So this is where I'm going to do my pitch for the entire Civic Media website, which is civicmedia.us, because not only will you see all of the stations that we're on now and the coverage map, so you can see how much of Wisconsin we're covering, but if you click on the top banner on shows, not only does it take you to a description of every show in a really nice, easy layout, but right there on each show's page is the stream, the running list of all of the shows that you can then listen to in podcast form. And that, you know, that's one of the things, like, say, Aaron is responsible for is the moment that we finish an hour. I clicked right now on the Up North News show and up came our music for some reason. Anyway, the podcasts are right there listed. So you can get us in all the usual podcast places, Apple and Google and Stitcher and Spotify and whatnot. But you can also get them right here on the civicmedia.us page. Go under shows and sample some of the other things that are out there. And maybe it becomes appointment listening either live or on demand as you roll these things into your podcast rotation. So I hope you give it a go, because we met some great folks recently. We will talk to Senator Kelda Royce next.
After the face is made, but there's a hope that's waiting for you.
Welcome back. Here on Up North News Radio, we're joined now by State Senator Kelda Royce from her Capitol office. Senator, good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to be able to see you again, and congratulations are in order, I understand, on your appointment to the Joint Finance Committee. Is it indeed congratulations to be appointed to that body?
I think it's generally congratulations with a hint of condolences.
There will be some long hours ahead. There's no doubt about that. But for folks not familiar, this is a joint committee rather than an assembly finance committee and a Senate finance committee. It's kind of one-stop shopping for the state budget, but it means the fights are extra big as well. Why is it that was an important committee for you to serve on?
Well, we have a historic surplus in Wisconsin, $6.6 billion, and it gives us a real opportunity to right some of the historical wrongs over the last several years and even decades, where we've underinvested in critical public services. I think it's really important that we have advocates on the state's budget writing committee that understand what the people of Wisconsin need and deserve in terms of services, and that we can deliver it. We no longer have the excuse of we can't afford it. We absolutely can afford, and we need to make these kinds of investments if we want Wisconsin to thrive in the next generation.
I think that's important to talk about the nuance for a second here, that I think everybody knows it does not have to be, you know, spent or invested or anything all at once or all in one area. Some of it could go into a rainy day fund. Some of it could go back as tax cuts or new spending. But something this size also allows you to kind of rethink the way things are done. For Republicans, that would be the tax code. For Democrats, that might be, you know, the formulas for shared revenue and aid to school districts and things like that. What are your thoughts on making some permanent changes to structures because you have this amount of money to work with?
Well, I think that's a great point. A lot of times the legislature fails to act because there are going to be winners and losers. And in a situation like this, you can sort of soften the blow. If you're going to make changes, for instance, to the school funding formula, you're going to maybe hold harmless some of the wealthier districts that have been able to, you know, fund as much as they want. They have high growth. They can pass, you know, referenda whenever they want to. You can hold them harmless while still delivering that much needed aid to consistently underfunded urban and rural schools that really, really need it because they have higher costs and higher needs. So that there's an example where this is a bit real game changer.
What will happen instead at the beginning, of course, because it's like the opening of any negotiation, and we heard this during the campaign, Republicans saying the $6 billion surplus is simply proof that taxes are too high. It should all go back in the form of refunds because, I know you've heard this line before, government can spend money better than you can. You want to tackle all that at once in terms of those initial talking points that we'll hear?
Yeah, I mean, it's so ridiculous. You know, the reason that we have this historic surplus is because in the midst of a once in a century global crisis, President Biden, Democrats in Congress, and Governor Evers stepped in to stop an economic crisis from happening. We thought we could have been dealing with mass unemployment, with a huge depression, with the closure of small businesses everywhere. And while we did see, obviously, some economic strife, by and large, we have come out of that pandemic much, much stronger. And that's thanks to the work of Democratic elected officials making needed targeted investments in the places where it mattered the most. And so those investments created the economic picture that we're seeing today, where we've got record low unemployment, we've got small businesses opening up and that were able to survive that pandemic and thrive and grow. And Wisconsin is really poised to have a good economy for the next several years, thanks to those investments. So the idea that this is somehow because, you know, the state of Wisconsin shouldn't have this much money, I think just shows the intellectual vacuity of their arguments.
We're talking to Senator Kelda Royce about the $6 billion surplus, what to do with it. One of the first stories we ever did when Up North News signed on 3 years ago was in the month or two before the pandemic set in, there was the pleasant surprise that there was going to be a surplus of around $400 million. And there was the usual back and forth of, you know, tax cuts versus, you know, spending and things like that. This $6 billion surplus, again, sounds like it would be the ultimate win-win. But one has to ask, given the very deep partisan divides, do you feel like there will be enough Republicans and Democrats who will look at some kind of a final package and go, I really don't like one of these things, but if it gets this thing, I'm going to have to swallow hard and say, okay, let's do it? Or are we going to have a face-off that actually takes us past June 30th because Republicans and Governor Evers and legislative Democrats can't come to an agreement?
That's a great question, Pat. And, you know, I think the people of Wisconsin deserve and expect their elected representatives to work together to, you know, grit our teeth and come to some agreement, even though nobody's going to get everything that they want. We have divided government in the state. And, you know, my mom would say, just always leave the door open for people to do the right thing. And I do, and I'm certainly going to work with that in mind with my Republican colleagues. That said, I mean, I think if you look at the track record, it's really unfortunate because time and again, when given the opportunity to do the right thing, to come to the table, they have shut the door in the face. You know, they've gaveled in and gaveled out. They've decided that because they have their power because of gerrymandering, that they don't actually need to be responsive to what people of Wisconsin need. They're not accountable to the voters, and they can keep their majorities and their power regardless of how out of step they are with what people are actually asking for. And so that's my concern. You know, when you have things that are so broadly supported, like support for childcare, like expanding shared revenue support to local governments, like funding our K-12 public schools and our higher education institutions that have been defunded for decades, you know, finally giving them the resources that they need to survive for the next generation. You know, those to me are basic Wisconsin things. It's why my parents moved to Wisconsin, because they wanted to raise their kids here. It's why I want to live in Wisconsin so that my kids can have that same opportunity. And I don't think that's partisan, but unfortunately in this climate, I'm concerned that Republicans will continue on this path of ignoring the will of the people.
Well, and along those lines, Republicans can obviously do feel good that they have this big legislative majority because of, you know, gerrymandering. They have a majority in Congress, again, gerrymandering, and Ron Johnson won as a result of billionaire super PAC dollars. So the question really just comes back to Tim Michaels losing to Governor Evers, that that is the best place to look at and say, what are the lessons Republicans should learn from the Tim Michaels campaign that could help them actually win elections where they don't have an unfair advantage?
Yeah, I think that, you know, Wisconsin is a purple state. We're not meant to have unified one-party control. You know, as frustrating as that is to me as a Democrat, I'd love it if Democrats were in charge and we always had enough money for schools and libraries and investing in our kids. But, you know, I think Republicans absolutely can win elections fair and square here in Wisconsin without cheating. But to do that, they're going to have to be responsive, and they can't be going to the far, far extreme of defunding our public schools and instead shoving it to, you know, religious charter schools, you know, some of which are run by very, very dubious organizations. They can't say that abortion needs to be a crime when the vast majority of Wisconsinites want it to be legal and safe. They're going too far to the extreme to win elections fair and square.
Well, speaking of going to the extremes, that takes us to both Supreme Courts, the U.S. Supreme Court and the state Supreme Court. And with the state Supreme Court race that's coming up for an open seat, it will determine control of it. While it is technically nonpartisan, it's that in name only. What does this race mean to you and others about the stakes that are in play with that seat?
Well, with all respect to Governor Evers, I think that this election for the Supreme Court coming up February 21st is the primary and April 4th is the general, is actually more important than the November elections. And that's because this is for all the marbles. This is about whether abortion is going to remain a crime in Wisconsin or whether it's going to be constitutionally protected. This is about whether the right to vote means the Republicans can put any restriction on they want and still call it democracy, or whether or not we're going to get to have fair maps and actually have an opportunity to elect a candidate of our choice. This is for all the marbles. And because of that, I think it's really important that we unite behind our strongest candidate. I'm strongly supporting Judge Janet Protasiewicz from Milwaukee. There's no question that she's got more experience than anybody else in the field, 25 years as a prosecutor, almost 10 years on the bench, working on a wide array of cases. She knows the law backward and forward, and there's just no there's no comparison. You know, the conservatives on the court that are running are both real extremists. You know, they went to a fringe law school. They both are wildly out of step with what Wisconsinites want and care about, and they would just do the bidding of the big corporate interests and right-wing ideologues. And we just don't need more of that on the court.
Last question is on the U.S. Supreme Court. They, of course, heard this case, again, about a fringe theory, in this case, about state legislatures and election rules. And it certainly sounded like Justices Alito, Gorsuch, and Thomas would vote in favor of this. We're not sure about the other conservative justices. But to put it to you in terms of the case, Senator, do you believe that you and others in the state legislature should have virtually unlimited and unchecked powers to design elections and results however you wish?
No, that's a scary and frankly, really anti-American thought. The whole American project, as the founders conceived it and as it's developed over time, is that you have a system of checks and balances so that one person or one branch of government doesn't have complete control with no accountability. And what is being asserted is a fringe legal theory that would basically give rogue state legislatures, many of which are gerrymandered, you know, and so already have limited accountability, complete control without any review by the courts, without any ability for the executive branch to intervene. And that's very scary because ultimately what it means is that a legislature like Wisconsin's that's gerrymandered to have a massive Republican majority that doesn't reflect the will of the people could decide to throw out Wisconsin's votes if Wisconsin goes for Joe Biden in 2024 and say, well, we're going to award those votes to the Republican candidate or to Trump. And that's terrifying because that really would be the end of American democracy.
Mm-hmm. Senator Kelda-Royz, we really appreciate your insight on all kinds of things, state and courts and local. Great to see you. Have a great holiday season and we'll talk to you in the new year.
Sounds good, Pat. Thank you so much.
Again, our thanks to Senator Kelda Royce for that interview that we taped late last week to share with you today on her thoughts as the newest Democratic member of that very powerful legislative budget writing committee on what to do with more than $6 billion in surplus. It will not surprise you to hear that, again, to this point, Republicans are talking almost 100% about tax cuts. And if nothing else, maybe tinkering, parentheses, interfering with some other government functions, you know, under the guise of reform. We'll talk about some of the comments from Senator Chris Kapenga made over the weekend on a statewide Sunday TV show. Also more about so-called Zuckerbucks and how local governments are going to get a new round of help since places like the Wisconsin legislature won't help them themselves. We'll be back. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
We'll have the phone lines open for this segment. In our next segment, we'll talk to Terry Bell from our newsroom. So if you want to get in your two cents during this segment over the next 15 minutes, 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. Radio at upnorthnewswi.com is our email address for any comments and questions about the show. Our friend Matt McNeil is getting some well wishes from us, and we hope from you as well. The host of the Matt McNeil Show out in the Twin Cities was in a somewhat serious car accident over the weekend, is going to recover, but did require some time in the hospital, and says that he's on the way back to recovery and is even going to be able to resume his radio show here shortly. But again, we just wanted to send our own get well wishes to Matt on having the misfortune of being in a traffic crash over the weekend. State Senator Chris Kapenga was the guest on Capital City Sunday, put forward statewide by WKOW-TV. And I want to play some sound of Kapenga, the senator, being questioned by the host, A.J. Biotpur. And A.J. does a great job of following up with Senator Kapenga in asking whether he's going to support Trump in 2024. Now, I could tell you how much Chris Kapenga fawns over Donald Trump, but AJ actually does that really well in the follow-up question. Let's listen.
I think there's other candidates out there who are, or potential candidates who are talking about it right now, that a lot of people in the party have said, hey, maybe we need to look elsewhere. So that's it's something that we just have to see what happens here. As time goes, are we going to have multiple candidates, or is President Trump going to be the one that kind of pushes everybody else out? I think there's a desire to see multiple candidates.
Going back to the summer of 2021, you shared a letter you wrote to Mr. Trump. You wanted to correct the record on some things he'd said about the legislature's 2020 election review. You went so far as to note that you had boarded a plane wearing Trump socks. If the primary were held today, would he still be your first choice?
It depends on what other candidates are going to put their names out there. I can't say that at this point. Hopefully, we've got a good list of candidates. I don't think 19 or 20 is a good thing for the party because we get a lot of segregation in those debates. I think it should be, or hopefully, is just a couple of strong candidates. And I'll have to make my choice at that point.
So make one. If you don't think Donald Trump, again, whose socks you were wearing and bragging about and kowtowing to, if you now want to say, you know, he's not the right fit, but you also don't want 16 candidates in like there was in 2016, then you better get behind somebody, because otherwise you're just going to get this. And maybe it's what you want all along. You don't want to sound too cozy with Donald Trump, but you can't help yourself. Kapenga also noted, of course, on the surplus that, again, tax cuts that it seems pretty clear to me that would be geared toward the wealthy rather than doing the most good for the most people. And then there was also the note that he wants to, again, he and other Republicans want to try to hurt newly jobless workers as early as possible by further restricting access to support, including unemployment, for people who don't have jobs. Governor Evers vetoed such bills last year. Despite the state having a consistently low unemployment rate, Kapenga doesn't have the unemployment rate to point to. So instead, he points to the state's labor participation rate. That's what tracks the percentage of people 16 and older who are working. Kapenga said on the show that the percentage of labor force participation is dropping, and there are people stepping out of the workforce. And what we can do is increase that participation for folks. In other words, he's saying they're lazy. It's the Tim Michaels thing again, saying that people in Wisconsin are lazy. What AJ Bietpor makes care to note in the story is that the reason the labor participation rate has declined and has been on a downward trend for a decade is a little thing called the baby boom. As all those folks are retiring, they're leaving the labor force. There aren't as many young people who are stepping into it. So the percentage does go down. And part of the reason more baby boomers are retiring isn't just age alone, but now you have the oldest of Gen X who's retiring as well, because they can, because they are financially secure enough. It's not that they're waiting for a government handout check, as much as you want people to believe that. The motive behind this kind of argument is that we want to set the conditions, Republicans, that make it so that there, you know, if there's no minimum wage, if there's no unemployment, you're going to have to take whatever you're offered. And, you know, again, to take it to extremes, it's the coal mine. You know, it's, you got to do whatever we want you to do, rather than, you know, making sure that we have the conditions that get the most out of those who want to participate in the labor force. But you have Republicans at the national and state level saying, well, let's find ways to get people back in the force. You know, they're, in other words, they think they're retiring too early. And that should be the, you should be celebrating that, that if people have taken care of themselves, have built up their finances, but instead it's such a kowtowing to the, you know, to corporate America, that we'll do whatever it takes to get you workers, even if they're miserable, even if it means cutting off any assistance when they're newly jobless. That's the kind of nonsense we're getting at the state level. Dick from Madison's on the phone to tell us about some nonsense from national Republicans. Dick, good morning.
Well, this will tie into him, Kapenga. You could ask him, too, is he down with the former guy's nonsense of a week and a half ago, you know, terminating the Constitution? And I know I'm getting picky, parsing words, but this weekend I'm reading in the New York Times, couple articles, they referred to it as suspending. He didn't say suspend. He took it a little
He said terminate. You're right. I'm so glad you caught that. Yes.
Excuse me. I'm really sick of hearing that. And then a quick question. Do you pick your bumper music? I love it.
Thank you. It's very much a joint thing with Aaron, me, and sometimes the guests. Thank you.
You can always go, in my opinion, with early Chicago, which you have.
I will but say thank you for that, Dick. The early Chicago often gets played when we have Mark Jacob on, because he joins us from Chicago. That was not his choice. That was just my excuse for playing early Chicago. Yeah, and at no point, as Mark said, stop doing that. So I'll try to do that now and then as well, Dick. That's very nice of you to say. What's that?
Yep. And I'd never say no to that either. First four albums or something.
That's great. Dick, thank you so much. I hope you enjoy the week. Thanks for calling in. Also in the news, the State Department of Health Services is going to need another secretary. Karen Timberlake, who has held the job for the past couple of years, is leaving Governor Evers' administration at the start of his second term. She's the second cabinet member to announce that she will not return for a second term. Same could be said for DNR Secretary Preston Cole, who said that last month. Pretty normal stuff. You know, not everybody signs up for 8 years of something when they say they're going to do 4 years, and their boss, whether it's a president or a governor, wins another term and they think this is a good place to step off the merry-go-round. So that's not the noteworthy thing here. The noteworthy thing is that her title until January 2nd will be Department of Health Services Secretary Designee. Karen Timberlake. Why secretary designee? Why not just secretary? Because she never got a confirmation vote. Neither did her predecessor, Andrea Palm, who was DHS secretary designee before leaving to take a job in the in President Biden's administration. Timberlake is among the many appointees of Governor Evers who never received a confirmation vote in the Senate the entire 4 years of Governor Evers' term. Now, again, that might sound ticky-tack to some folks, like, you know, little details, because you can still do the job. But to not give a governor a confirmation vote up or down on their appointments, which, again, is more of a courtesy, is classless. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. It's just classless, and I would say borders on buffoonery, that you're so insecure in your politics that you won't grant a confirmation vote. And in so doing, it risks becoming downright corrupt. Oh, but wait, Republicans in Wisconsin already crossed that line with the corruption that is the conspiring that goes on to keep the Natural Resources Board controlled by nominees of Scott Walker, even though one of those board members' terms expired years ago now. And as a result of the right-wing justices on the state Supreme Court saying, I don't see anything wrong here, you've got a board with an illegitimate member on it, but that, again, we don't have a court system that is independent enough to do something about it. And why we still have people called secretary designee, because they haven't been confirmed. What are Republicans doing instead? They're making up issues about things like election integrity, which takes us to our next story. You've heard the term Zuckerbucks, perhaps, named for Mark Zuckerberg, whose funds were primarily responsible for starting a group separate from Facebook. This group was called the Center for Tech and Civic Life. And this group handed out millions of dollars to municipalities, state or rather local, county, city, around the country to help fill the gaps because legislatures, primarily controlled by Republicans, and their tight budgets were making it harder and harder for local governments to administer elections, which was leading to fewer polling stations, which was leading to longer lines, which was leading to longer time needed to count the ballots because equipment was getting old. All of these reasons for Republicans to basically create a self-fulfilling prophecy about elections not working. So up comes the Center for Tech and Civic Life and starts handing out grants to municipalities. Well, Republicans picked on that and said, oh, it's a sign of election interference, when it wasn't. The grants are used for everything from improving websites to recruiting poll workers, building larger and more secure office spaces. It gave out $350 million in 2020. And although there was absolutely zero evidence to support that the money was being used for anything untoward, that's what Republicans kept saying anyway. Well, the Center for Tech and Civic Life says that a new round of election grants is about to go out, and that this round of money will not have Zuckerbucks in it, will not include money from Zuckerberg. And that, to keep in mind, that money didn't just go to big democratically controlled cities. It went to nearly 2,500 municipalities of all sizes and of all manner of control. In other words, red areas and blue areas received money from the Center for Tech and Civic Life. They shouldn't have to need that money. But again, as long as you've got Republicans doing what they're doing, like blocking nominations, that's what's going to happen. And Bob from West Dallas has a quick comment about that. Robert, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I really think Evers or Sarah Rodriguez or whoever it is, the Democrats in general, they need to go out and do a roadshow on the surplus. And they need to talk about priorities for communities and also the tax burden or levy that's happened on their communities as a result of them holding on to the money. I don't believe Evers should negotiate with them on the budget at all until his nominees get confirmed. I mean, they're not doing their job. They're not showing up for work. Everyone knows it. And I think that's what he has to do. He has to take it to the voters and go right past them, take it to the people in these areas.
It's a very good idea, Robert. Thank you. And I think that I know that the governor will do, you know, a couple of listening sessions, but you're right in that I do think more should be done. Unfortunately, here's the punchline for why Republicans don't have to be motivated to act. At the state level, state government doesn't shut down if there's no budget deal. You just continue operations at the same level, the same underfunded level that Republicans put in originally, so they don't have incentive to do anything but be obstructionist. We'll visit with Terry Bell after this on Up North News Radio. One of my most favorite holiday tunes, Christmas Wrapping by the Waitresses. It's the most contemporary of them, talking about, you know, trying to find somebody and pursuing them all year and finally linking up at a grocery store, at an all-night grocery at Christmas time. Terry Bell joins us now from the newsroom. Terry and I haven't seen each other face to face in the better part of forever, because he worked at TV13 in Eau Claire years before I did, and we've been on other adventures ever since then. But, you know, wasn't that a great little Civic Media holiday party over the weekend?
That was terrific. I was explaining to people that you just don't see big holiday parties anymore. It's been a long time since I've been to one like that, that one has been offered. Christmas parties have been kind of scaled back a lot over the years for cost considerations and other things. So
I would say the other things, probably more so than the cost. I as I described it earlier in the show, they were becoming an HR nightmare.
Oh yes.
And I want to take personal responsibility for some of that, because I don't know what the TV 13 Christmas parties were like when you were there.
They were fun.
And I can't really tell you what they were like when I was there, because I'd have to remember them a little bit better. But they were fun.
Oh, they were a lot of fun. And, you know, when you're in your 20s, like a lot of young reporters at entry-level markets are, you know, you tend to have a lot.
You're underpaid. you feel underappreciated. You're overworked. They finally give you some time off. They give you a couple of drink tickets, and then, you know, Katie barred the door.
Pretty much. Yeah.
But in this case,
yes,
you had a fine group of mature, upstanding Civic Media radio employees who I think, and now Aaron's never been to a company holiday party before, so this was his first experience with it. When you feel a certain level of appreciation from your employer, when you feel a certain amount of respect that they're not just putting out a box of pizza, they're saying, here, this is what we want to do and we love what you're doing, I think that's how you get a successful holiday party.
And I think it just speaks to how well the ownership really wants to, you know, build a team and build that esprit de corps amongst everybody. Since we do work in disparate locations, bringing us all together. I mean, people from all out state were down in Madison, and I just think it speaks well to what this company is starting and wanting to continue.
Yeah, and Sage and Crute both spoke a little bit at the dinner, and the stuff that they had to say about bringing the mission of, you know, community radio and just giving people options to hear different opinions and just the truth. And then Crute talking about how he loves his job, being able to recruit all these people. It just really added and knitted everybody that much closer together, I think.
Well,
yeah, it did. It helped us appreciate, you know, what we're doing here, why we're here, why Civic Media was created. And again, to see, I had no idea how many employees we now have at Civic Media, because we're scattered all over. So to see that, you know, little, not a ballroom, but, you know, meeting room be as full as it was, helped you appreciate that much more, that there's a lot of people depending on each of us to get this right.
That's for sure.
But you made perhaps one of the big sacrifices. You skipped out on the comedy club so that you could pay attention to the Badger volleyball match as they tried to get into the Final Four, going so far as to text message updates, which I deeply appreciated. And now if only we could have had a good outcome, but I guess it was quite the thrill ride before it ended.
Very exciting. I guess it was very loud in the field house. I was probably better off staying at the hotel watching the match, because being in the field house would have been pretty intense, and the field house is often pretty intense. But yeah, the match got away from the Badgers. They were playing from behind most of the night, which I think is tough to do. That kind of gets you out of your ball control strategy when you're, you know, having to play catch up most of the time. And the serve receive game this weekend was pretty much our downfall. I think in that last match, Pitt had 8 service aces, which,
yes,
when you serve
8.
The ball across and it doesn't even come back. So Wisconsin was having a tough time with Pitt's serve. And when you give away 8 points like that in a very close match, you know, you're not giving yourself much room for success. So all credit to Pitt. They played a fantastic match and definitely deserved to be in the Final Four.
They definitely did. For those folks who care about the score, against best of 5 sets, it's 25 points to win a game, except if it goes to a 5th set, it's 15 points. And the Badgers, I want to get this right here. The Badgers, no, I'm not sure if the score is right, but did the Badgers win the first 2 sets? No, it was 1-1, right?
Right. They barely won the first set. It was very exciting. They were behind most
25-23,
of the first set and then
right.
rallied. Then they lost the next 2 sets, won the
both of them by 25-21.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then the Badgers rallied in the fourth to make it 24 with 25-19 to force that 5th set that they lost 15-13, which is as close as you can get it. Again, huge drama. You probably were right just to lag behind instead of kidding. Cause I heard that was the longest match in program history at 3.5 hours.
Wow. You know, none of the Badgers big playoff tournament games have been easy come. I mean, it was the championship a year ago was very hard earned against Nebraska after they just won a slugfest against Louisville. So I think it speaks to the fact that college volleyball is evolving. It's not just a handful of blue blood programs that just run the table every year. There are more good players, more good coaches, more good programs, and you're seeing more teams step up. This will be the first time in many, many years in the Final Four that there's not a Pac-12 or Big Ten team in the Final Four. So I think that also speaks to that.
Well, it didn't help at all that they put the Big Ten teams against each other in the round of 16. You had Ohio State and Minnesota facing off against one another, and Wisconsin and Penn State up against one another. So it's not the world's biggest. When you right away take 50% of the teams out, some folks were very, very unhappy with the scheduling of that.
Everybody has a beef when the brackets come out, and it's always an interesting and fun and sometimes very informed and sometimes misinformed conversation about how those matchups are determined. But that's the discussion and the passion the fans feel is all part of the fun of following a sport like that.
Yeah. Hey, anything in particular that you're following in the week to come here, or are we still kind of early in the week? It's in that weird no legislative session yet. We're post-election, so it's kind of, you know, you're kind of hard to know what to preview this week.
Yeah, it's a slow time of year. You spoke with Kelderoys earlier this hour, so the leadership teams for each party in each house are being formed. That people are looking ahead, these lawmakers, to dealing with the budget coming up. That's going to be the big story next year. $6+ billion surplus, and a lot of the discussion about what kind of needs are going to be served by that. I think that's going to be obviously the big story for next session.
Oh, no doubt about that. Terry Bell, thanks so much. Good to talk to you. Have a great week.
Good to talk to you.
All right. That'll do it for us today. You can follow us all day long, Up North News WI, on the socials. You can follow me on Facebook at Pat Kreitlow Up North, Pat Kreitlow on Twitter, and also now on Post and Mastodon, getting there as well. Hans Breitenmoser tomorrow. Up next, Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Stephanie Miller in Madison, Todd Alba for the rest of us on the Civic Media Radio Network. See you tomorrow.